You can do anything if you're in the movie.
Hello and welcome to
Family Movie Night. I'm Dan.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Asher.
And I'm Gwen.
And here we talk about a movie that we watched together.
But before we spoil it for you, we quickly let you know how much we like the movie and if we recommend it.
And we let our kids chime in before they go to bed.
We watched The Beauty and the Beast from 2017, and I think it was really good.
Asher, would you read the IMDb synopsis for this movie?
Sure. An adaptation of the fairy tale about a monstrous-looking prince and a young woman who fall in love.
Perfect. Now we tell you briefly what we thought of the movie and whether or not we recommend it. Okay, would I recommend this movie to a parent like myself? Yes, I would.
All right. Maybe it was because I'd seen the animated version and it was so similar that it felt like it was moving slowly. But maybe if someone hadn't seen it, or I guess if you were taking your kids to see it and they weren't familiar with the animated version. Anyway, that's my long-winded way of saying I wasn't super impressed. Gwen, how about you? Would you recommend this to a friend of yours?
Probably if they already watched the other Beauty and the Beast.
The animated version?
Yeah, the cartoon version.
How about you, Asher? Would you recommend this to one of your friends?
Maybe not, because it's a really... I don't know why.
Gwen has a look of horror on her face.
Yeah, she looks... She looked evil, now she looks happy, now she looks angry.
Why wouldn't you recommend it to a friend?
Because it's just, like, gooey and emotional, but it doesn't... It's not really that kind of aww movie. It's like, aww at first, and then it's like, when is this gonna stop? When is this gushy moment gonna stop? And it's like, okay, now it stops. I mean, some parts I would recommend to my friends, but not most of it.
All right. Thank you. Honest assessment.
Yes.
So this week, we're going to try to bring our kids with us beyond the spoiler horn. Hold on, kids. Here it comes.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
All
right. All right.
He does that later.
Welcome to the post-spoiler horn apocalypse.
Woohoo! That was scary. I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, there was like zombies everywhere.
It is scary.
If you bring up the apocalypse, I think of zombies.
Spoilers are scary.
Even though they're not real.
They're so eaty.
They don't know how to live. They don't have a brain.
So, do you have anything specific that you want to talk about the movie? Any funny jokes? Any good scenes?
I like the part where he was like, the beast is like, well, because Belle is like, oh, have you read all these books, really? And he's like, some of them were in Greek. And she's like, are you trying to make a joke? That part felt awkward, but it also sort of felt funny because it's like, ha, 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 ha.
All right. Yeah. What other parts?
I think that I like the part where they did the tiniest snowball fight ever, where Belle just threw like this tiny snowball and it like touched him, and then he threw the snowball that's like the size of her face and it knocked her to the ground. And she was laughing and stuff. I would be like, "Ouch! Give me the 911."
Yeah, that was surprising. I wrote down a note that said "avalanche to the face."
Yeah, that's what it would feel like.
That was it felt like a scene out of Elf.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's like...
Snowball comedy.
Speaking of elves, I'm reading a book about elves.
Oh, what's it called?
Keeper of the Lost Cities.
All right. Did you guys like the way that things looked in the movie?
Yeah, except for... I thought that the prince, it's like... It's like, is that supposed to be a prince? It looks like a normal teenager that you just put a wig on. It's like, you can find any old teenager, not one of those drunken ones, not one of them that went down the bad alley lane. It's like, you get a normal teenager that's had a normal life and is doing well in it and getting average grades and stuff in school. Yeah, you get one of those teenagers and you put a wig on.
Do you remember what you said when all the servants were turning back into, like, candlesticks and feather dusters and stuff?
Is this a sad version? Because I love these types of stories.
All right, you guys. Did you pick up any messages from the movie? Any sort of...
True love hurts, but it pays off.
All right.
In the end, I
probably
guess...
not. That's only if you actually have a baby.
Gaston is a mean person. Hurts. Don't be in a small village and be a girl that loves to read books.
All right, great. Now I think it's time for Story Corner. Take it away, Jamie.
So today we're going to talk about remakes because that is what this movie is. It was originally a cartoon, which we've seen. And then they remade it in a different way. And usually with remakes, they try to do something different. They try to shoot it with a different mood or different information in the story or something like that, which is a good thing because usually we want to see something different because if you see the same exact movie again, then the audience is left thinking, what is the point, right? So that's kind of a just short little overview about remakes. And it's been done a lot in Hollywood through the years with lots of different types of movies. So what did you guys think was different about this Beauty and the Beast that we just saw and the one that Disney made several years ago that was all animated?
Before you answer, let me just say that the first Beauty and the Beast was 1991 and this one was 2017. So it was about 26 years between them. And one of the problems with making a movie again is that you want there's like a balance that you have to strike between keeping things the same and changing things because you don't want to watch the same movie again, but you also
want it to stay true to the original idea.
Yeah.
Most of the time, people, that's what they want.
Are you guys familiar enough to notice any differences or similarities?
Well, it does look more realistic in one.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any
2017 one?
Yes. Were there any changes in characters or their what they wanted or anything like that or how they behaved?
No, I don't think so.
All right, do you guys have anything else to say?
Nope.
How about you, Asher? All right. Thank you, guys. And it's time for bed.
All right. Good night. We send the kids to bed because it's past 9 o'clock and because we don't want to crush their innocent spirits with our criticism.
If you have feedback for us, you can contact me on Twitter at Dan Hickson, or you can email feedback@familymovienight.net. Visit familymovienight.net to see show notes and other information about Family Movie Night.
If you like what you hear on Family Movie Night, please share with your friends and show your support by leaving ratings and reviews on iTunes. Even if you don't get your podcast through iTunes, an iTunes rating or review will help other people discover this podcast. We would really appreciate your help in promoting Family Movie Night.
All right. Jamie, you have a couple items of follow-up. Would you please share them with us?
Sure, I will. So first of all, we talked about MacGuffins last time, and I wanted to just mention that a lot of times that term is used in a derogatory way, even though the term itself isn't necessarily referring to something that's bad. But usually if you can pinpoint what the MacGuffin is very easily in the movie, it is a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think it has to do with like the overtness of it, right? Exposition is something that has to happen in storytelling, right?
Yes.
You need to tell information, relay information.
Right.
If it's very noticeable, that's not as good as if it was just woven
organic.
In. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing about MacGuffins that I wanted to say. So another bit of follow-up was that we, my kids turned on a different Lego Batman movie that doesn't have all the A-list stars voicing the characters. And we watched that and I thought it was like just as good. as the Lego Batman movie that we reviewed.
Yeah, I think it's called Lego Batman Adventure Superhero something. We'll put a link in the show notes. But it's a solid movie. I think it's like 80 minutes long. It's pretty short. It's made by the people who make the Lego video games. Mm-hmm. It's funny, but it's not like laugh out loud funny most of the time. It's more of a
story driven. I think it's more story driven than mm-hmm. it is like the
there's
the,
some clever things that happen.
The Lego Batman movie that we reviewed is more
joke driven.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay, mm-hmm. but it's also not very memorable. Like, to be honest, the stuff that sticks mm-hmm. out to me in memory is not the good funny lines. It's like the silly junk that they put in there, like flexing our abs is going to save the city, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, pah, you know, that's the kind of thing that I remember from that movie. Whereas the other one, I feel like the story was good and thought mm-hmm. out. I don't know. Like, so I asked our kids actually, I'm like, well, which one do you like better? And they're like, oh, we like them the same.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. That it for follow up?
Yep.
All right. Moving right along. Yeah, I guess maybe I have an opening statement.
Okay.
We talked about the problem with remakes, and it definitely is the problem to solve is how do you make it similar enough so that you don't offend the fans and different enough to
not
keep,
bore the audience.
Right, right. And I feel like there was so much sameness that it moved too slowly. I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I should check the run times between these two movies. Because I wouldn't be surprised if the other one was like a 90-minute movie. The runtime of the 1991 Beauty and the Beast, 84 minutes. The runtime of this was 129 minutes.
Hmm.
So they added 44 minutes.
Yeah.
Is that math correct? So yeah, it took its sweet time. It was like, hey, we have a captive audience. People love Beauty and the Beast. Let's give Cogsworth some more lines. Slowly getting off something. I don't know. So
yeah. So let me ask you this. Do you feel like you're super familiar with the cartoon version, the 1991?
I don't know why, but yeah.
Okay. Because for me, I could probably quote that movie like from start to finish, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that amount of familiarity that I had, I thought that it was not like very different, mm-hmm. but it was different. Like, I was expecting it to be more similar.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we start off with a face full of makeup and talk of taxes, which is very different from mm-hmm. the original. But we do have our familiar voiceover for about 5 minutes. But as soon as it goes into the provincial town, I was like, this looks like an animated film. Right? Because it was all
the
computer
CG,
graphics. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and France is still British, I see.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got a British accent. Yep. They used
except
all
for Lumiere.
Yes. Who is Scottish, right?
Ewan
McGregor. I thought he did a really great job. Yeah. And I think that it's just because people expect that from Lumiere, right? There was
right.
I feel like the wardrobe also was. Had a little bit of French accent. There were a couple people in there that had some French accents. Mm-hmm. For the most part, everyone was British,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. And honestly,
like Les Miserables.
I have to say, yes, of course, France is British to Americans. That's what they think that we think.
That's the message of many, many stories.
Yes. And I guess that I will just go ahead and make an opening statement with my experience, because really I was not expecting to like this mm-hmm. movie at all. And it's not like I'm in love with it, mm-hmm. but I did enjoy it and I wasn't expecting to. First of all, people warned me. You know, I didn't see it in the theaters for a reason, because they were like, okay, Emma Watson is very auto-tuned. And that was very true.
Yeah. Within 3 seconds of her, you know, starting her song, did I pause it or not? I can't remember. But
maybe.
But I said, does she sing? Because it sounds like a robot is singing.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, in cases like that, I'm like, just lip sync to someone's voice that's similar to yours. You know, mm-hmm. like the auto-tune is so obvious and apparent, but mm-hmm. she sang so infrequently and mm-hmm. And I kind of maybe got used to the auto-tune where I was like, whatever. And honestly, too, I forgave her the auto-tune before I even saw the movie, because she looks so perfect for Belle. Okay. And she did do a good performance. Yeah. You know, she gave a good performance. So, and this is our first like live action-ish movie that we're reviewing so far.
And I guess to Emma Watson's credit, I was expecting to watch this movie and make Harry Potter jokes the whole time.
Yeah.
But I didn't get big Hermione vibes from her, even though she looks, you know, very much the same.
She's playing Hermione. I mean, come on. Like, Belle is, like, so similar to Hermione. No, but I agree with you, though.
But she's not, like, annoying. I mean, and
that's why I think it's
adorably
amazing,
annoying.
Though.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, Belle and Hermione are, like, the like such similar right. characters, and mm-hmm. she still didn't get the Hermione vibes go. From me. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So this movie was very much putting on a show, for sure, because the costumes were very costumey. Mm-hmm. The look of it was very like, we're doing CGI and we don't care. Like, we're just doing it, you know?
It felt more like a stage show brought to life than...
Yeah,
you know,
like we're not trying to make this fabric shooting out of this wardrobe look real at all, mm-hmm. you know? Like, it was just kind of like... We're just, and even the Beast's face, I kept like honestly getting like Gollum vibes a little bit because not because he looks anything like Gollum, but because of the way that he was animated and the way that, that he looked to be. I was so glad that the movie was mostly dark because that at least kind of helps with
cover
that
up.
CGI. So here's the thing. I'm saying all these things that bugged me because they did, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess I kind of knew going in that that is what I was going to be experiencing. And so I kind of just automatically forgave it. And it's funny because as a vocal teacher, a lot of people are, you know, expect me to be super harsh critic on people who sing. And it depends, because if it's a movie about people who sing really well and you can't sing, then that bothers me. Mm-hmm. But any other time, you know, I'm like, I don't care if you're singing with passion or if you're trying or, you know, like, I don't know. I like it doesn't bug me as much as it does a lot of my friends who are singers, you know. Mm-hmm.
My next chronological note says the library had approximately 12 books.
I loved that, actually. Because it's this huge
small
contrast.
Provincial town.
Yeah, she's living in this tiny town, which sometimes looked a little bigger than what they were saying. You know, there's like a bunch of people like storming off to the castle and stuff like that. It's like, so did the whole town go, or you know, whatever. But I liked that there were like 12 books in the library. Because
I would be okay if there were 12 books in the whole town, but there shouldn't be a place
all in one
called,
place.
Well, there shouldn't be a place called the library
right.
if it only has 12 books.
I see what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah. So yeah, just and if she would have said like, oh, in your like alleyway or it looked more like a religious hallway. There's a big crucifix on the wall, and it felt more like it was just like the wing of some abbey in the church.
And
or
maybe
something.
It was, you know,
yeah.
Like, and it was just like an
the
unofficial
library,
yeah,
where they have pagan books about traveling to other lands
and
that don't exist because
like
the world
Romeo
is flat.
And Juliet and stuff like that. I thought it was interesting that they changed the words to the songs, and they didn't use a lot of the songs, and they made different songs for the movie. And some of the songs I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And some of the songs I was thinking. And I don't think you maybe should have put that song in there. Like the song that the Beast sings, I think it's like that new, it takes the place of the one in Broadway where it's if I can't have her, then who, you know, that's his big song that he sings at the, I think the end of the first act. And that was the Beast's like, why didn't you just use that song? Like, it's a good song. Mm-hmm. And they made this new one that I was kind of not into. And maybe if I listened to it again, I'd like it more. But just right off the bat, I was thinking this does not add to this story at all.
Yeah,
so
they just wanted to add a new song.
Yep. And they added several, actually.
When that song ended, they did a big old crane pan away computer graphic shot. And I said, hey, it feels like I'm watching Les Miserables again. Which
and
is
we
a,
all know how much you liked which, those shots in Les Mis.
Which is a dig on Les Miserables and this movie. They're both worse than the other in that scene. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Like it's interesting, right? Because there are a lot of things that I can say to critique this movie. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff, right?
And if I think about it as like a dad watching a movie with his kids, it was fine. It was great. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to notice things. Back in the provincial town, Gaston says, he sings his song, "I'm going to make Belle my wife." And Asher said, "That sounds like a threat."
And I said, "It is."
Yes. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was good. I think, okay, so I'm going to say, like, just to kind of back up a little bit, I thought that they actually did a pretty good job of connecting things together a little bit better. Like, I kind of liked that the Enchantress hung around and, like, was kind of checking on stuff. I liked that Belle, like, saw this picture of her mother and there was a rose in the picture, and so she asks him to get her the rose. And I know that that's kind of a callback to other versions of Beauty and the Beast, other stories.
Which is good, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that that was totally fine. And the fact that he, like, steals the rose and that's what makes the Beast, like have him there rather than just you're trespassing or whatever. So, I mean, it's still a pretty thin excuse to like throw someone in a dungeon, but still the fact that like a rose is a big part of the story and it's a different rose or whatever, but still it's kind of nice that they put those little things like all throughout to kind of tie the story together a little bit better. I also liked at the very beginning when everyone's dancing around in white dresses and that part was a little confusing to me. That's fine. But I liked that they explained why nobody remembered them, or like it kind of made the sense of time a little bit better to me, because in the original I'm like, well, how many years have passed where like thorns have overgrown, you know, this castle and like whatever, and people don't know that it's there. Like it was kind of a weird, like it never was explained in the 1991 version. But in this one, they actually say like, and part of the enchantment was that everyone in the town like forgets that they're there and forgets them. Right. So I was like, oh, okay. So they did a pretty good job of like explaining stuff that was not explained in, the original, 1991 Beauty and the Beast. So I appreciated that. There were a couple jokes that they added that I thought were funny, and there were some that fell a little flat for me. So one that I laughed at, like I laughed out loud, was when
the guillotine joke.
That one was funny. That was one of the ones where
it feels weird to be
loud.
Laughing at a guillotine joke.
He says, "After all, Miss, this is France," and then it like. Chopping.
It was just a chop, and something about the sound and the "this is France."
Yeah, and it was just a knife chopping.
I don't know,
zucchini or something like that. I don't know, but
it was subtle
hilarious.
Enough. Yeah, it was subtle enough that you know, but it felt like a guillotine joke, which it's got to be pretty rare in a kid's movie. But it was funny to me.
I also liked when they were trying to say what it was about Belle that. You know, LeFou and Gaston are talking, and he and LeFou says that je ne sais quoi, and Gaston says, "I don't know what that means." That's the first thing that made me laugh out loud.
So I had problems with Gaston. So my first note is, too bad they couldn't have made this movie a decade or two ago and cast Donny Osmond.
He's played it on Broadway.
I know, that's why I thought of him. what was my deal with him? I felt like he had like an incorrect amount of depth or dimensions, right?
You wanted him to be more
straightforward. I wanted him to be two-dimensional.
Okay.
Right? And he felt like he was like 2.3-dimensional. And that might sound funny, but it's mathematically, you know, there's mathematical basis for fractional dimensions, so I can say it. But he wasn't like a fully fleshed out like character who has an arc or anything, but it felt like he was more human than he was in the 91 version. And there was just something about it that bothered me, right? Where I was like, well, wait, is he gonna like have a character arc? He kept like, he would go like get angry and then LeFou would like calm him down and they'd be kind again. And I'm like, how can he do all this stuff? Isn't he just like a one-track mind, macho man, take the girl, throw the father-in-law in prison kind of guy? I don't know. So he felt different in a in a bad way.
That's interesting because honestly, for me, I was like, I kind of liked what they were doing with him because the original one, he was very like, I'm a villain, the end, you know? Mm-hmm. And then now I'm going to talk about like the Broadway version. And for those of you who don't know it, sorry, I'll just tell you, you know, he is a womanizer. They make him more of like a, oh, don't worry, once I'm married, we'll still have fun together. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that kind of was a stupid choice because like his whole point in marrying Belle is like he is the most interested in Belle.
But isn't that like, you know, she's a trophy?
Yes. And
he's not interested in
right.
her.
Right. True. But I don't know. I kind of liked that he was a little bit in this one darker
darker. Just, he seemed like more sincere, like in his affections and stuff.
Yes.
And so like Belle almost came off as a jerk for not like letting him come over for dinner because he didn't do anything wrong, right? Until, you know, he does things later, but he didn't have a kill the cat moment.
Kill the cat. Okay, so one of the things that I thought was super weird was when he actually was like, okay, Maurice, I'll go with you to see this beast. And he totally did it. He and LeFou right. were with him. And he's like, oh, it's this way, whatever. And that I was like, oh, like they didn't just have him thrown out
into the
street. Yeah, they actually. I think it maybe was.
I felt like they threw him out into the snow, but maybe not. Maybe it's just into the street.
Yeah, but the thing that was like interesting to me was that scene after when they're in the woods and stuff like that. I thought it was a little much that he was like, well, I'm trying to be nice to you because I want to marry your daughter. And the father was like, you will never marry Belle. I was like, why?
Right.
What is wrong with you?
Right.
You know, like,
see,
why?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was under vilified.
Well, at first.
At first, sure. He, you know, but even
but then.
But
then he like ties the man to a tree, you know, and know, he does have rage problems.
Which felt out of place. For his character
At the beginning, they did make him a lot nicer.
It seemed like he was a nice man before the war, and then he got post-traumatic stress disorder or something, and now he's like sometimes a jerk. I don't know. He was like more complicated than I want to handle.
Well, and I was thinking, because the Beast was a monster at the beginning, right? And I'm like, this version of this movie made me think to myself, well, that's sad. Maybe Gaston could have been saved in the same way that the Beast was, because they were both kind of jerks.
Yeah,
right?
They're both vain.
And like, so this prince, of course, gets a second chance through this terrible circumstance or whatever. But still, like, how come Gaston can't have that same chance? You know, movie was thinking, making me think those thoughts.
Yeah, and it shouldn't. Gaston should be a bad guy. And you should hate him and revile him the whole time.
Oh, that's not the way that movies are going nowadays, though. Every villain is like, you gotta know their backstory, you know? I understand that there were some problems, some issues with the way that they handled Gaston's character. But I mean, you still get the idea that he doesn't really like... He's still hunting. He's still like, oh, the ones that are harder to catch are the ones that are worth it, you know? And you're like, okay.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, he still is kind of shallow and vain and whatever. So he has the bad qualities at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, he does. And he's, you know, loving himself in the mirror. But at the same time, I feel like you have to carry over what you know about Gaston from the 91 movie into this movie to understand why he does the things he does. I don't feel like his character stands on his own in this movie. It's just a very confusing character.
It is a little confusing. I will agree with you.
Yeah. And another complication that felt not well treated, not well handled, was like the Beast had daddy issues.
Yeah.
Like,
didn't really delve into that a lot. They just kind of mentioned it.
They just kind of mentioned it. It's like, okay, well,
so your dad made you bad?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Okay. Now we can forgive you. Maybe Gaston's dad made him bad.
Yeah, I know.
Let's do another movie in 25 years.
I know, Gaston. Maybe he has a redemption too. Mm-hmm. Maybe Agatha, the enchantress, like, is at the bottom and she's like, let's do the same thing. And then it's with a new person or something.
Yeah.
He's the new Beast. This is so funny how much we have to say about this. I really didn't think I was going to have very many notes. I really didn't. And I took like 2 pages of notes. I'm not going to go through them all because that's a little crazy. But I did love how the dad was freaked out when he was in the castle. In the cartoon, he's like, oh, little fella, how are you? To like the objects that are alive.
Right.
And in this one, he was like, nope. And he took off.
Which makes sense because, the realism there, you know, in this movie.
It's creepy.
Well, the realism was higher. And so, yes, that would freak you out. You wouldn't think, oh, you're nice. Thanks for laughing at my mustache. I was kind of surprised at when this movie was set.
The styling was like Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, I was trying to triangulate things with like, there was a musket and then there was like a flintlock pistol of some sort.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, powdered wigs. It's like 1700s, I guess, which seems more modern than I would expect a fairy tale to be.
Yeah. They made a choice, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, post-plague, post-Shakespeare.
Yes.
That was another triangulation point.
Yep.
And it was just, like, I kept thinking, when they first were quoting Shakespeare, I thought, wait, is this movie okay? Yeah, I was like, wait, has he been born yet?
Dramaturg, where are you?
Apparently, I mean, you know, but if they said it in the 1700s, which it seems like they did, I guess that's fine.
Yeah, I feel like when it comes to fairy tales, that's kind of why I enjoy them, because you don't have to think too hard about like the consistency of things. But like having Gaston have a gun, basically, but I was thinking, looking at that beast, I'm like, it would take three bullets to like kill that huge, you know.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. And so when the wolves had gotten him, I was like, that doesn't seem legit, you know. It seems like he's not really that hurt.
I thought the same thing.
How could they possibly
seems like
have
there'd
done
be
that?
A scratch on his shoulder that would hurt, but he could walk.
Yeah, he looked like he was like, oh, I'm gonna die here in the snow. It's like, what? Okay.
And you said the beast gave you vibes that were of Gollum.
Yeah.
And I can't explain it, but I got vibes of a character from the IT Crowd, which is a very funny but not for kids sitcom. And there's a character, a minor character named Richmond in it. And he is like a semi-flamboyant
goth
guy.
That lives like...
Yeah. In
a closet somewhere.
And he's, you know, he's a funny character. It's a funny show.
But it might have ruined the beast for you a little
bit. Well, yeah. Like, he's just like, oh, okay. I don't know. It was just funny.
He had this like bumbling, deep voice that was kind of weird because... It humanized him in a way, but it was almost like you're some stodgy grandpa or something like that. It was like he was being kind of like sarcastic all the time, or like, I don't know. It was different. It was a different take on the beast, and it took me out of it sometimes, for sure. I wasn't getting Richmond as much, but
no, yeah, but it was just a funny thing for me. There was another surprising thing about this movie is that it involved teleportation and possibly time travel.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
That was another part of the movie that they could have...
Part of those 44 minutes.
Yes, that they added on, and who knows why they did this. But like, yeah, there's this book that has a map of the world on it, and you can go anywhere you want as long as you're thinking about it. So she thinks about her childhood home, which was this tiny rundown...
It was a windmill.
Windmill over Paris. Mm-hmm. And it's like ravaged by the plague. And she brings back something from there. So it's not just like her kind of...
Right. It wasn't a simulation. It wasn't virtual reality. It was teleportation and I think time travel too. Because do you think that they abandoned the windmill like 20 years earlier or 15 years earlier?
Yeah, something like that.
And then it just stayed that way? Nobody else moved in?
I don't know.
It got condemned by, you know, the plague. They got quarantined. I don't know.
Well, and that's another thing is that the plague was like... a thing in this movie, and that's how her mom died.
Yeah.
And so that was also weird to me.
Yeah, it felt like, I mean, I guess what...
Maybe that's another Beauty and the Beast. I don't know. Right. I'm not as familiar with other versions.
And I think the plague might have been parts of fairy tales because they were scared of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But at the same time, like making it be in the world that we live in is weird, right? It's like when the three little bears live in a cottage in the woods. You're not thinking like, oh, that might be in the woods by my house. Yeah. Yeah. What year was this story told? No, it doesn't matter. It's detached.
Yeah.
But when it's like, oh, the plague, oh, Paris. And I guess it's in France. So, you know, it's always been set in, well, I don't know if it's always been set in 1991 version. It was set in France and that didn't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was also a cartoon.
And there was no teleportation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The Be Our Guest. It's funny how they start off by saying like, oh, well, look, we're in this live action. And so there's an expectation of realism. So at first, what we're going to do is we're going to have the dove duster fly a charger or a serving tray to reflect some, you know,
light
down
spotlight, yeah,
to cause a spotlight. And then
all bets are off.
And then all bets are off, yeah. And then things can change color. Like there's like
things
flashing lights. And
there's like 50 cakes. And yeah. Then, yeah, it seems like it's almost a dream or something like
right.
that.
And there were fireworks, which bothered me until, you know, later on I came to terms with the fact that this is set in our world in the 1700s when they had gunpowder and stuff. So it was just...
I love that that was something you even thought about. That wasn't even crossing my mind. And maybe it's because
yeah,
I was...
you were taken away.
I wasn't, though. I mean, I mean, because I would know. Notice all kinds of stuff. I don't know.
No,
like Plumet being able to fly was weird for me at first.
It was weird,
but
I didn't.
Why do you have wings? I don't understand. You're a feather duster, you know?
Yeah, I thought that was good. I thought, because how else is she going to walk around on feathers, I guess? She
I
did
mean,
the
rest
the
of them did it. Like, mm-hmm. How was Chip moving around? He was, like, surfing his saucer.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty inventive and fun, too. Yeah. Although, I kept wondering, like, well, what in this house is living, right? Like the plates seem to sometimes
be alive
and fly, but sometimes
not.
They're just used. And the books like start flying towards people. And it's like, well, I don't know. And then, yeah, the plates and the chairs. And it's like, well, is this going to be unfurnished when everything turns back into people? I don't know. And you ask these questions because of the realism, right? Mm-hmm. The live action leads you to think of these things.
Well, they make a joke about it too. Like when she goes into her room, she starts talking to the brush and she's like, hello, what's your name? And they just laugh at her. They go, that's just a brush, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you just don't know.
And it's, you know, it's not a big deal, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a fairy tale.
One thing that I thought was a little weird was at first when she knots together all those pieces of fabric and she's going to escape out of her window, like mm-hmm. before the whole story even starts, sort of like she gets put into that room in the East Wing, which wasn't the Beast's idea in this case because he doesn't care. I don't know. Like if he breaks the curse, he doesn't care that she's a girl, whatever. It like doesn't cross his mind mm-hmm. until the other people are like, hey, she could be the one. And he's like, you put her in the East Wing? What? You know, like he's super upset about this whole thing, which is weird too, because he actually allows her, I guess he has a save the cat moment before he allows her to say goodbye to her father. Mm-hmm. Right. Which in the cartoon version,
just drags him away.
Doesn't care.
I thought her little trick was good too. Right. Because he says, mm-hmm. I won't let you do this. And she says, okay, I'll leave, but let me say goodbye and give him a hug, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know,
she shoves him out.
I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah.
And of course, right, when she agrees in the 91 version, there was no problem because she agrees and the Beast drags him out, right? It didn't matter whether or not the old man was going to let her do that.
Right.
So both ways worked. But I liked hers because it made her more of an agent, I guess, you know, where
she's choosing.
Had a plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Locked
herself
in.
That's the thing. When she's like in her room and she's making a big old long rope to escape, mm-hmm. it was a little weird because I'm like, okay, well, she's that strong female character that we love nowadays. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to take control of her own destiny. But then she didn't even try to go out the window.
Maybe she looked out the window off camera and saw that the rope went like 10% of the way down that huge tower.
And thought, I might die.
I might not make it.
Yes. I think that the timing is problematic in this story because the timelines that are happening at the same time of Belle falling in love with a Beast and Maurice like going to get his daughter from the castle, which is pretty urgent, you know, mm-hmm. They seem to always be a little off.
When Gaston and LeFou return and Maurice is there, they're like, oh, thank goodness, Maurice, you're here. We've been looking for you for the last 5 days in the woods, right?
That's So that's why I think that they did a better job, like with this version like having time pass, you know? So, but still, it seems like it would take a while for Belle to fall in love
with that many books. 5 days seems appropriate.
I'd stay at the Beast's house if he had a library like that. That's pretty incredible. I love that. I thought that was kind of nice that LeFou got to have a little bit of a character arc where he's like, okay, I'm behind you 100%, and then he kind of switches sides. I liked the use of books in this one.
For punching people in the face? No. Oh, okay.
The fact that it helped to bridge the gap between Belle and the Beast.
Yeah, they were both readers.
And they both had similar thoughts and whatever. And I thought that is a smart way to actually bring two people together instead of just I feel sorry for you or I'm attracted to you or whatever.
You're not as mean as I thought, right?
Right.
Like, that's not quite enough. Yeah. But if they share an interest and they're quoting Shakespeare together, that's common interest that you can build on. Yeah, that's true.
So I actually really enjoyed that part of it. I thought that the Beauty and the Beast song, there was awesome choreography and the dress looked amazing.
a lot of wrist exchanges.
Well, I thought that that it was good.
Wrist pirouette, I think, is the term.
One of my friends told me that they liked the movie because it's not Stockholm Syndrome, because he asks her if she's happy and she says, can anybody be happy if they aren't free? But here's my issue with it. She seemed pretty happy beforehand with him. So I was waiting for her to be like, oh, I'm sorry, but you have to let me go before I can really commit to loving you or whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe my friend just made too much of that line, but I was expecting it to play out in a different way. Hmm. And I was sitting there thinking, you looked happy to me. You know, you looked totally fine with the Beast in your castle. So that was a little bit of a, I don't know what to say.
Am I thinking of a plié? What's this?
Oh, a plié is when you're bending.
Okay.
And a pirouette is when you're spinning.
Okay.
So that is a, oh man, it's not a battement.
Cross 'em ups.
Cross 'em ups. Let's just go with that. I really cannot think of what that is. We'll have to put that in show notes or something.
All right,
like that.
Listeners, we are sorry. I've failed you with my knowledge of ballet
terminology,
and we will put that in the show notes. So check the show notes. We will look up what that dance move is that I'm thinking of.
Okay. One of the things, too, that was weird was when she's talking about the Beast and she's showing everyone the Beast on this teeny tiny mirror that I, you know, and people are reacting like it's such a, you know, it's like, can you even see him? Mm-hmm. And he's in the cartoon. I know he was howling at the sky because he was missing Belle and his opportunity and whatever. In this, he was just kind of there
hanging out in the dark.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh no. And I thought that was a little bit of an overreaction. Plus Gaston says, I'd say she even cares for him. And I think how would you even know that? She didn't do the he's kind and gentle or whatever. It was just there's a Beast, here he is, I'm showing you. And then he's like, oh, I think she cares for him. It's like, what are you talking about? I don't know.
He's more sensitive in this one. So he could tell from the ball gown.
He just knew. So
Reads it like a book.
Yeah. And we both looked at each other in the movie where Belle turns to her dad and gives him the pen, the rose pen or whatever that belonged to the mother. And she goes, he took me there. And then the dad just kind of looks at her like, okay, that's fine. That's legit. You know?
Well, that's
and
nice
we
of
both,
him.
We both looked at each other and went, how? Isn't that the burning question in your mind? How did he take you to the past or I don't know, wherever they went, that was something that he just seemed to just be like, all right, sounds good.
It was as if she said, his name is David.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Cool beans. So, and I thought it was interesting too, in the animated, Disney version, that Chip stowed away and helped to rescue. And in this one, he probably wouldn't have been that much of a help. And I'm so glad that I actually did not miss that Chip was part of the rescue. I thought it was nice that Maurice, the dad, who's this inventor, it's like that makes sense.
Out.
You know, a teacup cannot save you, you know, it seems like the father that was a good change. And yeah, when Gaston said, "Sorry, old friend, it's hero time."
That was a weird line for sure.
And he seemed so unconcerned about the enchanted objects. He was like, mm-hmm. like they were alive and he didn't even yeah. bat an eye.
On
you
the
know?
Set, he couldn't see him. So.
So I guess it was fine. And I thought these Frenchmen are brave. If I had been confronted with objects that were like attacking me, mm-hmm. I probably would have run away right away. Especially so you don't see the beast. It's just these like teacups and feather dusters and stuff like mm-hmm. that are attacking you. And they just were like, okay. Like they didn't have the same response as Belle and her dad.
You see, it's a mini discourse on mob mentality and group thinking and how even the most absurd things can seem totally normal.
I like it.
Let's put it in the movie.
Yeah, that actually it sounds like a really, really good justification. I'm sure that's exactly what they were going for. Exactly.
Yeah, they didn't think we need to have a fight scene. Let's put it in. Okay. Give me that shoehorn. Thank you. The fight scene's in.
Yeah. So, and I also didn't know why Gaston would assume that the beast loves Belle.
He probably saw the 91 version. Like we were expected to do.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to get the opinion of someone who did not.
I know.
See that
I would
one.
Love to see movies with no mind, you know, like with no memory of certain things. Like mm-hmm. it'd be great to see Empire Strikes Back with not knowing, you know, like
you would probably hate it.
You think so?
Well, I'm just saying from the perspective of people who live in 2017 and you've never seen that movie before or heard any references to Star Wars whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just it's a great story.
Yeah. I mean, but if I knew it was if it was made in like 1980,
you might have be on board.
You know, cuz I can forgive special effects and things. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting to be able to do that. Like take a pill and then you forget very specific aspects of your life. And then and then you can watch a movie for the first time and you know,
have a
new judgment.
Sincere response
and then
to it.
And then the pill wears off and then you can remember both responses and hold them simultaneously in your mind.
Oh, that might break your brain.
Nope.
Okay.
Not my brain.
Your brain is strong like a beast. Okay, another thing that I thought of that was kind of funny is that the Beast had a lot of shirtless moments. And I was like, should have been played by Matthew McConaughey. There you go.
A different Matthew. Matthew Crawley from Downton Abbey. Again, don't watch that with your kids.
People die. Oh, no! Spoilers. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I won't tell you who. It's everybody.
Well, they were alive in 1914. They're all dead now.
Yes. Everyone, every last one of them.
I kind of loved the joke that Belle made at the end. Have you thought about growing a beard? Which I feel like is funny because I've always thought that in the animated version that the Beast was like a more attractive
yes.
being than the wimpy little prince that came out afterward.
That was actually going to be one of my thoughts.
And when this, you know, Matthew Crawley... Sorry.
Can't say his actual name.
He is better looking than the cartoon representation of that character.
Oh, by like 100%. Yeah. Like,
that guy was weird looking.
Yeah. But the cartoon prince, I always was like, turn back to the Beast, you know? Yeah. And that's funny as like a little kid to be like, mm-hmm. I think the Beast is prettier than the prince. I thought that... it was nice that they had him say, "I am not a beast." That he had that moment where he was like, just like taking control. And I also liked how the enchanted people in the castle were also taking responsibility for their circumstances.
Yeah, they didn't blame the beast.
They blamed themselves. They said, "We did nothing," mm-hmm. as he was turning into this terrible person. So, and the hair. Once the beast transformed back into
his long hair.
Yes. It was just as bad as the cartoon's hair. It was pretty, pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That wig.
His nightshirt was just as bad as well.
Yeah. I don't know why they decided to do that. Mm. I don't know. So anyway, I thought it was kind of cool that they were reunited with the townspeople and the townspeople were like remembering them. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I forgot you. And oh, I love you. And I remember you. That was an interesting difference mm-hmm. that I thought was it maybe added a little bit too. So I don't know. Like, I have to, I'm sort of with this movie. I'm like, yeah, I'd recommend it to people. I mm-hmm. think it's interesting to see the differences between the two. I didn't hate it. I didn't like love it either. You didn't love this?
No.
You would not recommend it, I guess. What did you say at the beginning?
Oh, sure.
I would say, and that's fine. We can totally disagree. It's fine.
It's just recommend it for what, right?
Right. I would recommend it for like looking at the costumes for fun and for critiquing.
Yeah.
Like, I would recommend this movie for critiquing. Like,
I think it's a pretty good case study of a remake, right? Like talking about the problems with a remake or the potential payoffs and things.
Yeah.
So sure. And, you know, I think I've enjoyed talking about it.
Yeah.
But would I recommend it to myself if I was going to watch it alone? No.
Well, and it's kind of weird because I feel like we have like opposite reactions is what I thought, because I thought you'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. And I thought that I would be like, bothered. I hate this movie. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
But I really was okay with the movie. I thought, all right, this is interesting for me to watch because of the differences.
Yeah. My biggest problem is like the pacing. I feel like it wasn't economical. The differences that we could list, or the, you know, the ways they celebrated the original, it didn't need to take 124 minutes.
Yeah. And I would agree with you there. Mm-hmm. I think that they could have been far more economical, tightened up the script a little bit.
Yeah, but that's okay. Because at the end, I like to imagine that the invitations went out to everybody and they said, you know, men, dress code is black so that I can be the prettiest prince in the party and wear baby blue.
Yeah, I think that's probably what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that's informed by the opening scene where he's getting lipstick and makeup on his face. So
for his awesome.
Yeah.
Marie Antoinette throwback party. I don't know.
Just reading between the lines. It's easy to do.
I thought that there was some weird stuff in there, but there were some things that I appreciated as well.
So. Yeah. I think that's a wrap.
All right.
Thank you. Goodbye,
bye,
listeners.